We've been looking at Hosea for a couple of weeks now. We've seen that Hosea is an allegory, but it's not just an allegory, okay? Because let me tell you something, beloved. If you wanted to convince me that it was just an allegory, then our chapter this morning would have to not be in Hosea's book, okay? Because God is asking Hosea to do something very specific. And we're going to look through this in a few moments, and we're going to see what this means in Hosea's life. But we understand, I mean, you know, all of us have studied enough about allegories, and let me just put a plug in for it. If you want to read a true allegory, and one of those that's considered a masterpiece in Western literature, I encourage you to read Pilgrim's Progress by Bunyan. We've got copies of it in our library. It's a great, great book. I mean, this is a great book. And this was a man, listen, he was one of us, okay? He was a Baptist, all right? And he was in prison because he was a Baptist, because he was preaching things that the church of that day didn't like, oh, I don't know, baptism, okay? But anyway, this is not a sermon on Bunyan. But I encourage you to read Pilgrim's Progress. It's a great, I would encourage you to try to find a modern translation, all right, because Bunyan can be a little bit difficult to understand in the language he was writing a little bit before the translation of the King James Bible, okay? And so his original work was in that same, written in the same way. Anyway, we understand that God told Hosea. I mean, we saw this back in the first chapter. And we saw that Hosea told him to go and take yourself a wife of harlotry and have children of harlotry. And you know, how many of y'all, and this may not be a good illustration, but how many of y'all have ever sat in a doctor's office and you heard the C word out of the doctor's mouth? Did you hear much else after that? You didn't. Once he threw that word out there, your mind was done, okay? Because now your mind is trying to process, I have cancer. Or someone I love has cancer. And Hosea is told, go and marry a woman of harlotry and have children of harlotry. And God goes on to explain why he's telling Hosea to do this. Because, again, if God said to one of us, go marry a harlot, our mind is going to be going, wait, what? What, Lord? And God explains why he wants Hosea to do this. One commentator said that in all of the world's literature, there is no record of human love like that of Hosea. Now, here's where we're at. Hosea has obeyed God. Okay? He married a wife of harlotry. They now have three children that at least one of them we know is not Hosea's because of the name, Lo-Ami, not mine. The other two are probably not his either. They've been together long enough that the children are probably weaned by now. Gomer is out of the picture. She's found her a sugar daddy. And she's living with another man. She's still married to Hosea. She's got three kids at home, but she's living with another man. And God says, verse 1, go get her back. Go get her back. Now, how many of y'all, your loved one goes off and they're living with somebody else, and you're still wearing their ring? How many of y'all want them back? How many of you even want him back at that point? But we know. We know that Hosea still loved Gomer. Why? This is going to shock you. Because God told him to. Hello? Young people, older people, you want me to give you a surefire way to kill your marriage? Base it on an emotion. Base it on the way that you feel. Base it on your favorite country song, okay? Base it on the way that you feel instead of understanding that God has called you to love this other person. No matter what. God called Hosea to love Gomer no matter what. And he loves her. And I just have to believe that Hosea has been spending the time that's leading up to chapter 3. Almost like, how many of y'all, is it the cathedrals that sing that? I can't even remember the name of it. But it's, you know, son, go get my children. Y'all know that song? Yeah. I tell you what, it's that song that if you ain't on your feet hollering by the end of it, something ain't right, okay? But anyway, I just got a feel that Hosea has been spending some time alone with God praying for his wife. He's still praying for her and saying, God, bring her back. Bring her back. God, you called me to love her. You told me that she was a whore. You told me that she was going to, you know, that she was going to be off with other men. But you never told me, Lord, that she was going to leave me with these three kids that ain't mine. And that I would be the talk of the town because my wife is not spending the night under my roof. God, bring her back to me. And one day, the Lord said, go get her. Go get her. It's time. It's time for you to go get her. Not in my notes, so don't panic. Why did Jesus come when he did? Galatians 4:4, right? When the fullness of time had passed, God sent his son. God decided that enough time had passed since creation, for Messiah to come onto the scene of human history. Now, when will Jesus come back? I'm going to prophesy for you. When God says enough time has passed that it's time for Messiah to come and get his children. Now, that's not my prophecy. I'm just telling you what the Bible said. Okay, I'm not naming a date. I'm not naming a place. I'm not naming a season. I'm just telling you that, see, once again, beloved, I mean, you want to look at this? Hosea chapter 3. Okay, let's take it out of the Old Testament context and put it into the New Testament context. Okay? And it's the exact same thing. That Messiah is going, I mean, Hosea ends the chapter talking about Messiah, doesn't he? And we can apply this same context to Jesus coming and getting his adulterous generation to come to him. See, this chapter, some of y'all may have been gluttons for punishment and read Gibbon's History of the Roman Empire. Anybody ever read that? It's a great book, but man, it's a hard read, okay? You're not going to sit down and read it in one sitting. And if you're like me, you like to read in bed, it's going to take you 20 years to read it because you'll fall asleep pretty quick in, all right? But I mean, Gibbon's History of the Roman Empire is a big old thick book. Here we have in Hosea chapter 3 the entire history of the nation of Israel. All of it. past, present, and future in five verses. God created them. He loved them. They were His. He said, if you will do this, I will be your God and you will be my people. Okay? But you turned away. I sent. Now for them, this is yet future. I bought for myself. I paid the price. And I brought you back. And God says that you will be pure during that time. You will remain for many days without king or prince, without sacrifice or sacred pillar. And then you will seek the Lord your God. So our account this morning begins with Hosea urging his children. We saw that last week. Hosea, come here, kids. Y'all know what your mama does for a living. Yeah, it breaks my heart. Y'all know that I love you, mama. And we're going through a rough patch right now. She won't listen to me. Maybe she'll listen to you. Would y'all go and ask mama to come home? Would you go and ask mama to go home? How many of y'all like being embarrassed? No hands? None of us like being embarrassed. How many of y'all, if you was Hosea, would get up and go to work every morning? Where you have to walk through the streets and everybody's looking at you. Okay? Guys, I don't know how it is for girls. I do know how it is for guys. When you're in high school, right, and you're in the hall, and there are two girls together, and they're laughing, you're convinced they're laughing about you. Okay? You know? You check if I got toilet paper or something. You know. You look to see if somebody stuck a kick me sign on your back. You try to be really cool and sly. Get over there where you can hear what they might be saying. Okay? And that doesn't work, so you just get your stuff and go on to class. Hosea is about as low as a man can get. He's at his wit's end. He doesn't know what to do. He loves Gomer. He loves her. He loves her unconditionally. And so he sent the kids to talk to mom. That doesn't work. We don't know how much time has passed between chapter 2 and chapter 3. But it didn't work. She didn't come home. She's committing a gross sin against them and their father. And God is using this as a picture of the adulterous wife and the faithful husband because it is a picture of God's redeeming love. We understand that Hosea and Gomer are about as far away from one another as they can possibly be. Now, obviously, we don't know how Gomer feels about Hosea, but we do know how Hosea feels about Gomer. I mean, we can surmise because we understand that Gomer represents Israel, and God is talking about that throughout all of this. And so we understand that Gomer wants Hosea's blessings. I mean, y'all, you know, I love to watch the crime shows. And on Law and Order, you know, in New York City, somebody, a wife will kill her husband or a husband will kill her wife and they're rich and the detectives find out that there was some inappropriate activity on the side of one of them or the other and they'll go and question the living one and they'll say, we had an understanding. Okay? We had an understanding. I was getting the benefits of being the partner of this person. I was getting the money and I was getting the prestige and I was getting the, you know, all of the stuff of the world. And I was letting them do whatever it was they wanted to do. And that's where Gomer is. She wants that prestige. She wants the prestige of being married to Hosea, the son of Beeri. during the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, the kings of Judah. And during the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel. Now, let me ask you a question. When Hosea identifies himself as the son of Beeri, what does that mean? You and I go, oh, cool, his daddy's name was Beeri. Well, Hosea wouldn't have written that down unless the people of his day knew who Beeri was. Okay? Now, we may not know who Beeri was, but obviously Hosea wanted everyone that heard and read his prophecy to know, I'm Beeri's boy. Okay? And so there was some family lineage going on here. And they're alienated. And despite all of the pain and the suffering, Hosea was to seek reconciliation with her. Now, let's pause here for a moment. Let that sink in. Some of y'all have experienced this very situation. I'm sorry. I can't imagine the pain that you've gone through. But get it in your mind. Your spouse has left you and moved in with somebody else. And God says to you, go get them back. And your mind says, no, God, I can do anything. But I just cannot do that. Go again. Let me talk about the verbs in this verse for a moment. Go and love are imperatives. That's a command. It's not a suggestion from God. It is a command from God to go and to love his wife. Yet an adulteress is a participle. That means that she is a whore. She continues to be a whore, and she has no intention of being anything other than a whore. The other two verbs, they turn and love, are also participles. They continue to turn to other gods, and they continue to love their raisin cakes. Why do people keep sinning? You don't need a degree in psychology to understand this. You don't even need a degree in theology to understand this. People keep sinning because they love their other gods. Okay? Why do people rob banks? Because that's where the money is. Okay? People love sinning because it makes them think that they're in control of their life. They think that this temporary pleasure is all that matters. We have entire advertising campaigns built around that notion. People sin because, listen to me, let me make it plain. Why does one spouse commit adultery? Because they love the other person more than they love their spouse. And some of y'all might say, well, they don't love the other person. At some level, they do. They're using love as eros love, sexual love. Why do people turn their back on God? Because they love the world more than they love God. Because they love the trappings of this world more than they love God. They think that those gods can give them more than God can. God's heart is a heart of love. And he tells Hosea to go reach out to Gomer. Now, I want you to get this in your mind. All right, kids, y'all wait right here. Daddy's got to go run an errand. I'll be back in a few minutes. Have you ever been called to the principal's office?
I have. About made a career out of it.
How many of y'all, your steps as you got closer to the principal's office got slower and slower? And Hosea's walking through town. He did not want to do this.
And finally, he gets up to the door of the house. Male voice from inside hollers out, "Who is it?" "Hosea, Gomer's wife, her husband." Next thing you hear is a bunch of people scrambling around inside. And somebody says, "Get your clothes on. Your husband is at the door." So he walks out and he says, "What do you want?" And Hosea looks him in the eye and he says, "I've come for my wife. I've come for my wife. She belongs to me now. She's mine." "How much? How much do you want for her?" Is any of this sinking in? I mean, how would this feel if you're Hosea? Well, I tell you what. She's starting to get a little old. I'm not making as much money off of her as I used to. I'll take 30 shekels for her. 30 shekels. And I don't know if Hosea showed up with all of this stuff or if he had to go back home and get it. But the price that he paid for Gomer is the price for a slave that we find back in Leviticus. It's what you have to pay if your bull gores another man's slave. That's how much Gomer is worth to this guy. Can I tell you something? Don't rush past this. Imagine the pain that Hosea was experiencing. All right, you got your mind around that? Revelation 3:20. "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and will dine with him and he with me." He's the God who runs in our direction when the whole world walks away. Jesus says, "If you'll just let me in, I'll take care of that sin. I'll erase that sin. I will come, and not only will I make you mine, but I will sit down and we'll have supper together. We'll have a meal together where we can talk and really get to know one another and have fellowship with one another." See, no matter the cost to him personally, God instructed Hosea to demonstrate an unconditional love. There's a whole lot here. I'm still on verse 1, and I know what time it is. So let's go to Ephesians 2, the reference to Ephesians 2. Y'all know the verses that I quote, John 3:16, showing God's great love, Romans 5, 8 through 10, Ephesians 2, "But God being rich in mercy, because of his great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in our transgressions, made us alive together with Christ. By grace you have been saved." You see, beloved, God loves the world so much that he paid the highest price imaginable to set us free. He sent his one and only Son, the Lord Jesus Christ, into the world to redeem us. And through the sacrifice of his life, through his death on the cross, we are set free and reconciled to God forever. Think about it. God loves Israel unconditionally.
God loves them unconditionally, and he has sent Hosea to show them just how much he loves them. And what do they love back in Hosea? Raisin cakes. They love raisin cakes more than they love God. Let me ask us a question, beloved. We say that we love God. We say that we love him with all of our heart, with all of our soul, and with all of our might. And yet, what are we chasing after? Are we out there telling people about Jesus, or are we out there chasing raisin cakes? Man, it got quiet in here. They love their raisin cakes. More, listen to me. They love something that they would eat in less than a minute. It would pass through their body and be eliminated and be gone. And they would have to do it all over again. They love that more than they love the eternal God who had redeemed them and brought them out of slavery and had purchased them with a price and said that there is a destiny for you with me. And they loved raisin cakes more than they loved God. Think about all of the trivialities that we chase and engage ourselves in. The people of God are going after fame and money and pleasure and shows and games and sports, and all of these things are taking the place of a relationship to God. There's hardly any one of us that couldn't look at our lives and find a half a dozen raisin cakes. God has set his love upon us and given himself to us unconditionally. Mark 8:37. What will a man give in exchange for his soul? Raisin cakes. Raisin cakes. They're giving raisin cakes in exchange for their soul. Oh, beloved. Verse 3. Hosea paid the price, and now we're in this period. You know, when I've counseled with people that have been engaged in adultery, always tell the offending spouse that the offended spouse now has more control over the relationship for a season. Okay? Because they need the accountability. And that's what Hosea is saying here. He's saying to Gomer, listen, sweetie, I love you, but there has to be this season of accountability. And he says, nor shall you have a man. In other words, I didn't buy you back just for the physical aspect of our relationship. I'm not going to touch you for a while. We're going to go through this season of abstinence so that you know that I love you for who you are, not just for what you can give to me. God had paid the ransom to free the adulterous people of the world. But it's necessary for every individual to trust the Lord. John verse 1, or chapter 1, verse 12 and 13. Look at this. As many as received him. You understand? Let me put it in the context of what we're talking about. But as many as turned away from their raisin cakes, to them he gave the right to become children of God. Even to those who believe in his name, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. Galatians 5:1. It was for freedom that Christ set us free. Therefore, keep standing firm and do not be subject again to raisin cakes, to a yoke of slavery. Some of y'all are old enough to remember the television commercial that really put Lay's potato chips on the map. How many of y'all remember it before I say it? You can't eat just one, right? You can't eat just one. And so what would we do at school? Somebody get a bag of Lay's tater chips, and I say, I can. And walk away. No. I'm going to sue them because I was able to eat just one. The point here, beloved, is the same thing with those raisin cakes. You can't eat just one. Once you start sinning, have you ever, remember when you was little and you had to lie to mama and daddy? Was one lie enough? No, you had to start building a whole web of lies to prop this thing up. And you can't eat just one raisin cake. Verses 4 and 5. God's heart is a heart that seeks to save all adulterers. As long as Gomer lived in sin, she and Hosea were alienated from one another. And so it was with the adulterous people of Israel. However, just as Gomer turned away from her lover and returned home with Hosea, so it will be with all who truly trust the Lord. The Messiah will fulfill the wonderful promise that God gave to the people of Hosea's day. So Hosea not only provided an illustration of God's plan for Israel's redemption, he was an example of obedience based on faith. It took a lot of faith to go to that house that morning and to get her back. How could he do that? How could he do that? How could he step out with that much obedience? He was able to do it because he'd already experienced a personal relationship with God, and he knew that he could trust God completely. What a great theology of forgiveness. It is initiated by God. It's consummated by God. And may God so move in our hearts that we come trembling out of admiration for the love that he has shown us in the sacrifice of Christ, out of adoration because he has loved us. And that, beloved, is a heart of redemption.